Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people involved, and it's headed up by its host and founder, Carol Marks. Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. And on today's program, we have a two-part interview with Lee Grant, conducted by Carol Marks. Lee Grant, an Academy Award-winning actress who won Best Supporting Actress in the movie Shampoo, and she's appeared in many memorable films such as Valley of the Dolls, Voyage of the Damned, and Airport 77. She's going to tell Carol about her explosive memoir, I Said Yes to Everything, a memoir published by Blue Rider Press. In this first part of the interview, Lee speaks about being blacklisted from Hollywood, how she enjoyed not having to carry a movie on her own shoulders, and her interview with Princess Grace.
Now, you have, when you were growing up, you took all kinds of lessons in the entertainment world, dancing and ballet and singing, but you really didn't discover what you wanted to do acting until you spent 2 years at the neighborhood playhouse. So what did you learn there that was so helpful and made you want to get into acting?
Well, I learned about life, actually. I'd been to three high schools, and I was a poor student except in English, and I was bouncing around wonderful, wonderful New York, you know, when you're 15 and 16. But until I went into the neighborhood playhouse, and my teacher was Sandy Meisner, who was one of the group theater, who taught Stanislavski, which was a whole new way of working. I found myself there, and I was 17 at the time, and it set my bar for life, really. Acting was my education, and learning about other people, and I'm basically a character actress, so I love to have parts where I learn about other people and make them mine, you know. It was a great growing up period.
And then your acting career on the stage and movies took off, and you were first noticed on Broadway, where you played a shoplifter in Detective Story, and that led to your role when it was made into a film, and that earned you the first of four Academy nominations, and finally an Emmy for your supporting role in Shampoo. Now, you just said that you like to do character actors, so is that why you really found the secondary roles more important than the lead in a production?
Well, you know, it depends. The lead has to bring the money in. You know, especially in films, if you are the leading lady, the studio is looking to see how much cash is coming in the movie theaters and whether they're making a ton of money or not. If you're the second lead, you don't have any of those problems, and you're free to do the kind of work that you really want to do without the worry of being the face on the dollar. You know, so I've always loved the freedom of not having to carry a movie, and felt badly about, you know, people who did, except for, you know, somebody like Meryl, who was in such, you know, extraordinary films and made such a mark as an actor, or Vanessa Redgrave, you know. Actors of that stripe, and recently the Kates from London, you know, the wonderful actresses, and just, you know, beautiful work, and no regrets.
And then, after a very great start, your career ground to a halt in the early 50s. So briefly, what happened that resulted in your being blacklisted from film and TV by the ignominious of the House Un-American Activities Committee?
Gosh, you think anybody even knows about that today?
They should. They need to.
Well, maybe the most popular show on television now is called The Blacklist. So, you know, it's odd to me. But at that time, I had just had a hit on Broadway, and I went into another play, which was written by my soon-to-be husband, Arnold Manoff, who had been in the Communist Party, and so had a lot of people in his play. And they were refugees from Hollywood. They had all been successful writers and actors in Hollywood and were no longer able to work there. And one of them, Bromberg, was called by the House Un-American Activities Committee, I think for the second time, and he had a very bad heart. And he confided in me how afraid he was and how he told them that he had a bad heart, but they called him anyway. And he ran off to London, and he died there of a heart attack. And so they had a huge memorial for him at the Edison Hotel. Thousands of people showed up. And they asked me as a young actress to speak at his memorial, and I said I felt that he had died because he had been hounded by the committee, that's what he had said. And 2 days later, my name was in Red Channels, which was a blacklist organization, and I didn't work from then for 12 years in film or television.
And then, amazingly, and I think this says something too, your name was cleared, you were no longer blacklisted, and And the thing is that it really made you realize that there was a lot of politics involved in your getting off that terrible blacklist, and that was something, I guess, that really was very unnerving, too.
Well, it sure was an education, Carol, you know. I must say that the blacklist period that was 12 years from the time I was 24 to the time I was 36 was my college education, and I got Phi Beta Kappa in that. I learned about the world. I'd never read a newspaper before I was blacklisted. So I learned a great deal, and later in my career, when I turned to directing and was able to make all the documentaries I wanted to make, you know, I tasted the freedom of it. It was a gift to me to be able to finally say the things that I felt or that I'd learned through the blacklist, and it was a very gratifying feeling.
Now, you were talking about the fact that you eventually did go on to directing film, television, and documentaries for HBO, Lifetime, and the networks.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't imagine, and you did study at the American Film Institute.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that it would have been easy at that point because the field was dominated by men. So how were you able to battle that outright discrimination you must have found and become such a highly respected director? Not easy.
Well, you know, I didn't know that there weren't any women directors, which was typical of my stepping off the cliff before I know not to. I got funding for my first documentary, which was the Wilmer 8. And I managed to talk the network into making it into a movie of the week. And that pretty much was the established way that I worked, that I was able to come to New York and make documentaries for HBO and then sell them to the network, which at that time was getting like a 40 million audience. You know, that was when we had just the three, NBC, ABC, and CBS, you know, before all of the subsidiaries went on. So it was, you know, a great time and a great discovery, and I didn't have to do it for Hollywood. And the audience was tremendous for us, so they wanted me to do it again.
I've got to say that before you went into directing, you had the most wonderful interviews. Some of them were sad. Some of them were so, you know, just made you laugh. But the one, people should need to read your book just to find out about all those interviews. But you were lucky enough to interview the late Princess Grace Kelly at her Castle in Monaco. So how did you find her? And I thought that was so interesting.
A friend of hers decided to do a documentary about her, a close personal friend of hers. And he managed to raise the money to hire me for some reason, because I'd never directed before. This is before I had a directing career. And go over to Monaco and sit her down in the palace and ask her about her life. And what you're referring to in the book was that as I asked her questions, you know, she stiffened and was kind of, you know, pleasant, but she might have been talking to, I don't know, somebody she never met before. And it was all very, very tight. And when they were changing the film and the camera, I said to her, Grace, you know, you come off as so uptight. And can't you just talk and say what's happening to you? I mean, your kids, the prince, your life here. You know, if it's boring otherwise. And she, poor little thing, she started to cry. And she turned to the producer and she said, boring, am I boring? I don't want to be boring. And my heart just opened up to her, you know. And what she did was to kind of confide in me between the times I was filming her, you know, that she felt very alone there, that the women in the court were very critical of her, that she could never do anything to suit them, and that she was living basically in a royal prison, in a sense, that she had much more freedom in Philadelphia and certainly in Hollywood than she had in the little duchy of Monaco, where, you know, there were snobs all around her. And she said that she was going to take Stephanie to Paris, that her husband wanted her to go for a year. And I said, oh, well, Paris, you know, you'll have a great time there. And she said, no, nobody invites me to dinner in Paris. They only want me when I have the satin ribbon across my chest. You know, so, you know, it's a revelation when you see people say, oh, Grace Kelly, she is the luckiest woman in the world. She's a princess now. Well, ask yourself what that means in today's world.
Absolutely.
Or yesterday's world, for that matter.
Academy Award-winning actress Lee Grant in conversation with Carol Marks, and we have a lot more of that conversation coming up when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and let's continue with a very interesting conversation between the host of our program, Carol Marks, and Academy Award-winning actress Lee Grant, who won Best Supporting Actress in Shampoo. She's been in a number of films, Valley of the Dolls, Voyage of the Damned, Airport 77. She's got a new book out called I Said Yes to Everything, a memoir published by Blue Rider Press. And in this part of the discussion, Carol talks to Lee about her roles as a bad girl and what she liked about being on the hit show Peyton Place.
You know, sometimes it's a lot of fun to play somebody who's a bad character in a play or on TV and not like, you know, and just exist there, not in real life. And so you really had a lot of fun playing that bad girl character in Peyton Place because it was the most watched TV show in America.
Yeah.
So what did you love about Peyton Place?
Oh, first of all, I came from, you know, a very dark period in New York to a house in Malibu, in Malibu Colony, which is the beach, which is people with suntans, with people who were happy, who people who went to market in their shorts. It was such a totally different life that I was just like flying in it. And I had my boyfriend, Joey Fury, with me, who later I was to marry, and I'm still married to him. And we just, like, couldn't believe how incredibly fun life was in Malibu as against, you know, the unfun it was in New York. And Peyton Place was also a family. Mia was on it, and Dorothy McGuire, not Dorothy McGuire, the other Dorothy, and Ryan O'Neill. It was just so much fun. And my character, I loved the character that she was a bad girl. She was the only bad girl on there. She was from the other side of the tracks. And, you know, recently I went to a show in Jersey, and the woman next to me turned around and said, "You're Stella Chernak." You know, this is 40 years later, more maybe. And so, you know, Peyton Place had such a place in those times. It was on three times a week, three new shows a week. So the whole country was fixated on it. And I'd gone from being out of the loop totally to suddenly being in the loop, you know, in a very big way. So it was so fun.
Now, for all your fans, Lee, are you happy today with what's going on in your life? And what do you enjoy most doing it? And I heartily recommend your book. I loved it.
I'm so glad.
What do you enjoy most?
What's going on in my life is here I am selling myself instead of a movie. And it's been, you know, it's been a kind of scary, interesting element. And I have my husband and my daughters, and I have five grandchildren, and I couldn't be happier.
That's great, and maybe we will see another book from you, because you turned out also to be a good writer.
Well, thank you so much for that. I'd never written before, and I'd written this book for myself, not to be published and not to be read, really, by other people. I had a real need to confront myself on a lot of areas. And so there are, you know, some admissions in the book that, you know, I would have rather kept to myself, but, you know, so many pages were taken out, so many left in, that I really couldn't control it anymore. So for better or for worse, I said yes to everything.
Well, good. So maybe you'll write another book. You never know.
Right. You are.
And I want to thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much. You are a wonderful hostess.
Thank you. That's an honor coming from you.
Thank you.
Lee Grant, Academy Award-winning actress, in conversation with Carol Marks. And by the way, the book that she wrote, an explosive memoir, is titled I Said Yes to Everything, a Memoir, published by Blue Rider Press. If you enjoyed this interview, as well as the countless others that have been conducted over the years here on A Touch of Gray, which has been in syndication for about 20 years, you can go to our website, atouchofgray.com. And check out some of our best shows, some of the individual interviews, and a whole bunch of information for better living, as well as some of the adventures of that unusual woman indeed, Carol Marks, the host and founder of our program. And atouchofgray.com is on the web, free of charge, and Gray is spelled with an E. Coming up next, we're going to take a peek behind the curtain that makes talk radio run as the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine, Kevin Casey, joins us. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We're joined at this point in the program, customarily, by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who's also the vice president, executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, which is an inside-the-industry trade journal covering talk radio and talk media, just like the radio station you're listening to this program on right now. So, Kevin, you know, talk radio includes not just news talk and politics. It includes all kinds of talk from shock jocks to sports talk. And then sometimes stories overflow where celebrity gossip will be on the political stations and politics will be on the lifestyle stations. And there's always something about sports on every station. And I think that one of the most talked about individuals in America today is LeBron James. Obviously, he's getting his share of talk sociologically as well as sports-wise on News Talk Radio. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. And, you know, it's funny, it wasn't that long ago that he left his hometown Cleveland Cavaliers to go to the Miami Heat, won 2 championships, and now he's headed back to Cleveland. And the way he's made both of these moves have really been the things which brought him out of the sports realm and into the greater, greater interest, if you will.
Yeah, no question about it. Now, you know, I remember when I was a kid growing up, we used to know our baseball players and our sports figures because they stayed on the team. It was before free agency,
mm-hmm.
and you hope they had a better year next year as opposed to they hired better players. It was a very different concept. Do you remember that? When you hoped your set of players whom you identified with and were loyal to, that they would play better.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to get rid of this guy and let's bring in this guy.
Right.
That is a really huge change in terms of the nature of sports culture. But that being said, I remember when and this is something all sports teams will eventually break your heart because they're businesses. They're businesses. And I remember it at the end of his career, but he still had a little juice left in him, the great Jackie Robinson was traded by the Brooklyn Dodgers. Robinson, Brooklyn, and the Dodgers are a key part of not just sports history, but American history,
yeah,
world history. They traded him to the hated New York Giants, the rival team. And Robinson could have made a lot of money, could have had another few years. He said, I will not go there. I will not betray the fans of Brooklyn. And he retired.
Wow.
And that is the counterpoint to what happened with LeBron James leaving all these kids that grew up idolizing him in Cleveland, a place that needs role models.
Yeah.
Now, who am I to say what a guy should do? But I'm just talking from the perspective of a sports fan. It'll be interesting, won't it, to see whether or not this move back to Cleveland undoes that, or whether the tarnishing of that aspect of his image will continue.
Yeah, you know, interesting. I think a lot of fans are happy to have him back. And you have to understand, too, there are probably places he could have gone for more money.
Yes. Oh, no, I think he's sincere. I think this guy is obsessed with legacy on every level.
Yeah.
And actually, deep down inside, I think he might have a real good place in his heart. It's hard to tell with him. He's an unusual guy. But we shall watch and we shall see. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. Kevin Casey is the executive vice president and he's the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine and Radio Info. Talkers is at talkers.com. Radio Info, the music trade, is at radioinfo.com. He joins us every week at this time on A Touch of Gray, which continues right here in just a moment.
Did you know an estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it? Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Oh.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined at this point in the program the rest of the way by our multifaceted senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, in conversation now with Todd Glass. Who's Todd Glass? He's a stand-up comedian who's performed on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, Chelsea Lately, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, and The Jimmy Kimmel Show. He's been around. He's going to talk about his new memoir titled, this is great, The Todd Glass Situation, A Bunch of Lies About My Personal Life and a Bunch of True Stories About My 30-Year Career in Stand-Up Comedy, published by Simon & Schuster.
When did you first become aware that you were a comedian? And is that a choice, or is that just the way you're born? I'm glad you laughed, because I was really nervous about throwing that one out there. Now, you actually were, now, first of all, you started, you had everything going for you because you were ADD, you were dyslexic, you were Jewish. So, you know, how can you lose with all of that working for you? And yet, how old were you when you first were doing working comic?
Well, I started in 11th grade, like the beginning of 11th grade. I found out there was an open mic night. Because I became obsessed with this place called the Comedy Works in Philadelphia, and we would go down, and they weren't all as big as they are now, but we would literally see, like, Richard Lewis, Stephen Wright, Jerry Seinfeld, Gary Shandling, Roseanne Barr, Eddie Murphy, Gilbert Gottfried, Paul Reiser. Like, we saw really good comedy. Me and my friends, we were, like, you know, 16, 17 years old. And then I found out they had an open mic night. I was like,
Was it really, how nervous were you going up in front of a crowd, particularly at that age? Although you did look older, they always said.
I did look a lot older. You know, I was really nervous, but you know what I always compare it to? In a weird way, sex, because if you don't have a drive for sex, you're not going to get, it's awkward, it's uncomfortable, it's embarrassing. I mean, sex is more embarrassing than comedy or anything, but the drive for it is so sensational, if I said that word right, that you will overcome the fear of it because of the joy on the other end. So if there's no really drive for sex, why would you put yourself taking your clothes off in front of another human being and bearing your soul like that? So I think, yes, I was nervous, but I probably deep down wanted to do it so bad that I just got over it.
And certainly you wouldn't take your clothes off just for the laughs. I mean, that just wouldn't be right. You were working on Broadway with Patti LaBelle very, very early in your career. I mean, that had to be just a real kick.
You know, it's funny. You never think you're, like, I remember specifically then I was about 19 and I was about to turn 20. And I thought, at the time, believe it or not, I'm not really young anymore. Like, I was the young guy. I was 16. I was 17. Now I'm not even a teenager. And I started to lie about my age a year. When I turned 20, I was like, oh, I'm 19, you know? So only now when I look back, I really do go, oh, my God, I was 19 years old. And I say it to this day. It was probably one of the most remarkable things, just spending a month and a half on Broadway. And Patti LaBelle was beyond nice. She was like my mom. She was so sweet and so kind. And I really did learn a lot about giving 100% every performance, you know.
You know, one of the things I loved in the book was seeing humor in your life, and humor as a defense mechanism. And there was a really touching scene you were talking about. Your dad died young as a heart attack, and the family is in shock. You're in the room with the body. It's quiet, and then you make a comment. What was that comment?
I said to my brother, and believe me, like, you know, we were very, very upset, but, you know, the humor doesn't ever go away. And I looked at my brother, Corey, and I said, did you check his did you check his wallet for any money?
It was the best. I mean, I could see that with my family. Humor is a coping mechanism. You were closeted for many, many years. What kept you in the closet?
You know, that's a question that I actually like answering, because maybe it's paranoia, but maybe it's not total paranoia. I think there's a lot of people, forget about people that, I'm talking about people that really don't care if somebody is gay. I mean, from their heart, they almost feel bad that anybody has to make an issue of it. They're like, oh my God, why is this an issue?
Yeah.
So because of their open-mindedness, they might not sometimes be too understanding. And I know with me there were people like that, like behind my back in a loving way, they're like, he's in the comedy community, we all know, and we don't care, we really don't care. But what they have to remember is a lot of people start this when they're younger. I didn't start hiding it when I went yesterday in 2014. It started back when I was 12, and then you get comfortable in the lie, and then you don't want it to be your identity. And then you think, you know, it's probably easier this way. I have a circle of friends that know. So I started a long time ago keeping it to myself.
Were you concerned when you came, and you came out on Marc Maron's show? Well, first of all, why and how did you pick Marc Maron's show to come out?
Well, he had been, like, doing a lot of shows that were sort of, you know, like some people affectionately say the Barbara Walters of a new generation, you know, where he would do a little soul searching. And when you talk to him, you can figure out why.
Yeah.
Partly him and partly the studio where he does it, which is like you feel like you're in Hemingway's, like where somewhere where he would write. And it felt right. It was I wanted to hit a large audience. And it wasn't only – there were a few reasons. I mean, one, I wanted to do it for myself because I knew it would be better. But I had a lot of stuff to say, I thought, not only about just, you know, coming out, which I say in the book I'd rather it was something tougher called, like, busting out of the shed, a little more manly. But I don't mind the term. It's what it is, and everyone knows what you mean. But and I thought I had something to say. Particularly, you know, one of the biggest things I wanted to say, and I never could say it. I held it in for so long. I mean, I could say it as a straight guy who's open-minded, and there's plenty of them. But you can't really say where you know what you're talking about, where the frustration comes from, unless you're honest. And that was just throwing around, particularly in my case, the word gay as an adjective,
yeah,
or any word, like the word, you know, I probably have empathy why people don't want to use the word retarded as an adjective. And people always say, oh, everybody's so sensitive. And you want to go, yeah, it could be you,
mm-hmm,
but you're being corrected. And throwing out the word gay as an adjective, look, I never in the book wanted to come off as like, oh, woe is me, or I had a good life. I really did. I do comedy. I'm lucky. But if people want to know what kept me in the closet, it wasn't F fags. It wasn't egregious acts of hate. Because I wasn't around that. I was around a loving family, and all my friends really didn't care that much when we found out a friend was gay. But what kept me was purely, I mean, it was monumental, hearing people say, that's gay, this is gay, that's gay. How long can you hear that the word that you are representing lame, instead of saying lame,
yeah,
or that's stupid or that's dumb, people would say it was gay, it was gay, it was gay. And I could not wait to say that on the show, in case there was anybody out there listening that still holds on to using that word to go, oh, I get it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you concerned, because when you put yourself out on a stage, you are really out there and bare, so to speak. It was interesting your analyzing or analogizing sex and comedy there. But what about hecklers? Were you concerned about the drunk heckler in the club?
You know, that is such a great question, because I did. I thought about so many actors that had come out and always tell the story that, oh, life's better, you breathe easier. I never heard anybody say that they came out. Well, maybe individual, some children or people like that, yes, they have problems with their family. But in the entertainment world, most people tell the story of it was great. But I did say to myself, they're not in front of audiences.
No.
You never know if somebody knew, and maybe that same person is talking and I go, hey, shut up, and I engage them. And so, yeah, I really did worry about it. But you know what? People, I don't want to be delusionally positive, but if I can
right,
be realistically positive, yeah, I'd go for it. Who wouldn't? There are, the world, with all the destruction that's going on right now, people are pretty incredible. And I found more people that I would never perceive. And the biggest thing I found out about this was I don't judge people if they're gay or black or fat or white or thin or rich, but I did judge people on I perceived whether they were open-minded or not by the way they looked. And I really try to stop doing that, because people would come up to me after a show that they look like they're 25, maybe a bully or maybe a jock,
yeah,
and they would come up to me and just say, sometimes the simplest words filled me with emotion. They would be like, hey, dude, good, you know, good for living the real life. You know, nobody needs to keep secrets. I've kept mine. And I thought, I would have never stood next to that person in Starbucks and thought, I'm next to this, you know, kind, loving person.
That's Todd Glass in conversation with Steve Wiseman. His book is titled The Todd Glass Situation, A Bunch of Lies About My Personal Life and a Bunch of True Stories About My 30-Year Career in Stand-Up Comedy, published by Simon & Schuster. Steve Wiseman returns to talk about the dangers of mailbox identity theft next.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast and more conversation with Steve Wiseman, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's an attorney and he's a prolific writer, and he knows about just about every topic under the sun, especially those that we deal with on this program. He's also one of the leading experts in the nation. He's a good guy. He's on the side of good, not the forces of evil. He's on the side of good in terms of the topic of scams and fraud. His website is called Scamicide.com. He's written the book, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, with a new book coming out shortly on identity theft, and we'll be telling you all about that. But right now, Steve is here to discuss the dangers of mailbox identity theft. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, identity theft, which is a serious, serious problem in this country, it actually is the biggest property crime we have in this country. It is larger than all other property crimes together. And it can be high-tech, like we know with computers, or it can be low-tech or no-tech. And although a lot of attention is often focused on computer phishing schemes, malware, and the other high-tech methods of turning you into a victim of identity theft, low-tech and no-tech methods can be equally as effective in stealing your identity. one low-tech method that's been around for a long time but seems to be making a resurgence is when identity thieves put strong glue, like the kind used on a mousetrap paper, and they put it on the inside of that swing-down chute in the mailboxes that you find scattered throughout the city. Now, these glue traps, they put this glue on the chute rather than letting it get down the mailbox. So when the lid is closed, makes it easy for an identity thief who's looking for checks that you might be mailing to a business or credit card payment, that letter won't go down the chute. They then take your check, which can either be altered through a process called washing, so the check is made to appear to be that payable to the identity thief, or they can take the information from your check and make counterfeit checks in order to access your checking account. They can also steal information from your credit card statement to gain access to your credit report. Another similar type of scam involves the identity thief putting the glue on a small object at the end of a string and lowering the string into the mailbox to go kind of fishing for your mail, checks, credit card statements, all that stuff. Now, although it seems like you should be able to trust the U.S. mail, you really would be prudent to mail payments and letters with financial information directly from the post office rather than use a vulnerable public mailbox. You should also consider making your payments electronically, which is even safer. When you do use checks, you should use a type of pen called a gel pen, which you can purchase at any office supply store. And the ink from these pens is almost impossible to wash off by a counterfeiter. Finally, don't put mail with personal information or checks in your own personal mailbox at your home. Often people do this and raise the red flag on that box to inform the letter carrier that there's outgoing mail to be picked up. Unfortunately, it also informs an identity thief cruising your neighborhood that there are goodies in your mailbox.
Wow, scary stuff. Thank you, Steve. Very informative stuff as well. Check out The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. The forthcoming book about identity theft, also published by Prentice Hall, all by Steve Wiseman. Also the website scamicide.com. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, one of our senior correspondents here on A Touch of Gray. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. And thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line, putting all these pieces together. A giant thanks goes to Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. I'm Michael Harrison, the anchor of the show, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.